Morning, everyone. Today's Daf Nedarim is Lamed Ches. We begin today on Lamed Zayin Amud Beis. We covered just some of this yesterday, but we're going to review today. We're going to be starting from the words Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, which is about a third of the way from the bottom of the Amud. Thank the Lupin Foundation for the sponsorship of the Daf as long as Zechon is Pantlibi Gabriela Bashmuel. Yesterday we talked about those things which are part of the Torah. It's Torah Misinai. The Gemara broke it down to four different categories of those aspects of the Torah which are what we'll call embellishments, if you will, but they're not really embellishments. They're part of Torah Misinai, but they were just there as added on. The reason why we got into this discussion yesterday is based on the Gemara yesterday, which allowed for charging of teaching of Chumash. You're not allowed to teach Torah at any type of fee. You can't collect money for teaching Torah. Just a moment of self-awareness. But okay, let's know. The moment is over. You're not allowed to charge any money. Ma'ani b'chinam, ma'fatem b'chinam. Just like I teach Torah with no charge. Remember, yesterday we had a debate between the Ran and the Rush, whether that's talking about Moshe, it's talking about Akash Baruch Hu. Either way, just like the original dissemination of Torah was done for no charge, so too, anytime you have a future dissemination of Torah, so it's done at no charge. So, and that's when you teach Chukim and Mishpatim. So then the Mishnah says that when you teach Chumash, so that you're allowed to charge. The reason why the Mishnah talks about it is because obviously if there's a neder, so then there becomes a problem, because if I'm allowed to charge and I don't charge, so then someone's getting a benefit. So why are you allowed to charge for teaching Chumash? So yesterday we saw two opinions in the Gemara. Rav was of the opinion, Schar Shimur, that the Chumash is being taught to young kids, and you're teaching Chumash to young kids, and therefore there's basically you're babysitting. So you're charging not for the teaching of the Torah, but you're charging for babysitting. Rav Yochanan, and obviously according to Rav, then there would be no, you absolutely would not be able to charge if you're going to teach Chumash to an adult. Meaning, if there's no Shimur, if there's no problem of rowdiness and getting everyone in line, so then you wouldn't be allowed to charge Chumash while teaching an adult. Rav Yochanan, on the other hand, says no. What you're charging is for Pisuk Ta'amim. You're charging for teaching the Trop, right? If someone wants to learn how to lay in the Torah, so the Trop is not part and parcel of the Torah itself. It is for what we referred to yesterday as ancillary to the Torah. So it was, according to Rav Yochanan, a rabbinic institution and a rabbinic innovation, and therefore you can charge for teaching the Trop. Rav disagreed. The Gemara yesterday pointed out, because Rav disagrees fundamentally. Rav is of the opinion that Pisuk Ta'amim, that the Trop is part of Torah Misinai. And therefore, according to Rav, you cannot charge for teaching the Trop, because Trop is part and parcel of the Torah itself. That then led to the discussion of the Gemara. What else is part of Torah Misinai? So now, according to Rav, Trop is part of Torah Misinai. So what else is part of it? That's where we're picking it up. From where we left off yesterday, we are on the bottom of Lan Zayin Amud Beis. Amar Rav Yitzchak, Mikra, Sofer, Itur, Sofer, Kriyan, Velo Ksivim, Ksivim, Velo Kriyan, Halach, Lamoshe, Misinai. Four categories, the Gemara says, are all part of Halach, Lamoshe, Misinai. It's part of the Mesorah. So Mikra, Soferim. So first of all, what is Mikra, Soferim? The correct pronunciation of the words. Eretz, Shemayim, Mitzrayim. Eretz, sometimes it's Aretz, sometimes Eretz. We talked about this yesterday. At the end of a phrase, at the end of a pasuk, it's Aretz. Somewhere in the middle, it's Eretz. Shemayim Mitzrayim, Kamatz Patach, some differences. Some suggest that really Shemayim Mitzrayim, that the fact that we put an A sound under the Yud, that's the Mikra Sofrim. That's part of the Mesorah. Meaning that without that, you would have said Shmim or some variation like that. Mitzrayim would have been pronounced Mitzrim. But the fact that we put an A under the Yud, that's part of Mikra Sofrim. Parenthetically, Yerushalayim. Most of the time that's spelled in Tanakh, it's spelled without a Yud. Yerushalayim is Shin Lam and Mem. And then what we do is that we put an A sound towards the end, Yerushalayim. Or I should say rather a Yud. We put the Yud in. Anyway, so that's also, I guess that would also fall into the category of Mikra Sofrim. Okay, that's category number one. Category number two is Itur Sofrim. Itur Sofrim is basically an embellishment of language. In other words, an extra word here or there just to make sure that we totally get the correct connotation of the pasuk. The achar tavaru, achar telech, achar teyasef, kid musarim, achar nognim. A number of examples the Gemara gives where you see the word achar. Achar is seemingly superfluous. didn't have to say that, but it just it's an embellishment of language, so we totally get the idea. Tzidkascha kiharere el, or kiharere kel. The another example where it's a bit of an embellishment. Here in this example, the chaf is a bit of an embellishment. In other words, it's your righteousness, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is like the mountains. We, even without the chaf, we would have understood that this is a metaphor, and the chaf is there added just to make sure that we totally get the idea. Kriyam Balok Sivan, examples of something which is read but not written in the Tanakh. Prasta Balachto Ishtecha Asher Yishal Ish B'dvar Elokim Binden Ivnasa Le had I'm sorry. La de Plata este hugad hagid hugad elai de hagarin elai de asorin. Okay, a number of examples throughout Tanakh. You'll forgive me. I'm not going to go through each one independently, but a number of examples where you have a kriv lo ksiv, meaning this one's interesting. In other words, you read a word even though the word is not found in the actual sefer itself. In Rus, we point this out yesterday. Rus has a number of examples of this where it is written. It's read, but it's not written, right? A lie, a couple times in Rus. You have to say it, even though it's not there. Okay, so that's part of the Masorah. Halein, Kriyam Velok Savan. And now we're going to go in the other direction. Halein, Kriyam Velok Savan. That's the, that's a close on the third category. Fourth category. Savan Velok Kriyan. Now we're going to go the other way. It's written, but you don't read it. So, Na De Yislach. The S Zosta Mitzvah Yidrok the Hadorech Chamesh the Fas Negev Im the Chigaol Halek Savan Velo Kriyan. So again, a host of examples, a number of examples of those things in the Chumash that are written, but you do not read it. Okay, so four different categories of Torah Misinai: pronunciation, embellishment, words that are read but not written, words that are written but not read. Okay, so four different aspects which are all part of Torah Misinai. We are on the top of Lama Chesam Adal, from here until the bottom of the Amud, till we get to the Mishnah. Gemara is going to give us Agarata based on what we saw yesterday. Amar of Achabar Adab Bim Ma'arava Pasuk Lahad Pesukal Atata Pesukin. In Eretz Yisrael, we have the following Pasuk. It's a Pasuk found in Parshas Yisrael. Vayamar Shema Moshe Hinei Nochi Ba'alecha Ba'ava Anan. So we have it. If you open up a Chumash and you look at this Pasuk inside, we have this long Pasuk as one Pasuk in Eretz Yisrael. So they had a Masorah that they broke it up into three separate Pesukim. Okay, so you see that there were variant minhagim / mesoras. Now, that's a little uncomfortable to say that there are various mesoras because there should only be one mesora. But part of the diaspora is that we have variant mesoras. So in Bavel, in Eretz Yisrael, they had this pasuk divided into three, and we have it as one pasuk. It could be connected. The Gemara Megillah tells us that in terms of reading the Torah on an annual cycle, which is what we do, so it could be connected to the idea that in Eretz Yisrael, they used to read the Torah not in an annual cycle, but they would finish the Torah once every 3 years. So, the Simchas Torah for them was, I don't say this seriously, but Simchas Torah was only once every third year. But that's not true. In other words, the Yontif itself was every year, but the completion of the Torah in Eretz Yisrael, this was an old minhag, was only once every third year. And the minhag in Bavel was to read it to finish the Torah every year. We obviously follow the minhag of Bavel to this very day. So maybe the idea of the Gemara over here, that in Eretz Yisrael, divided to three psukim, is connected to this old minhag. Amar Rabbi Chanin Allah Asher Moshe Ela Mipsal Asam Shaluchos. How did Moshe become wealthy? Meaning the Gemara is going to make an assumption, and the Gemara is going to support the assumption based on Psukim that Moshe was extraordinarily wealthy. And as we'll see in just a moment, it's a prerequisite to being a Navi, is that you need to be wealthy. And how did he become wealthy? So psaltam shaluchos. In other words, when he carved at the luchos, so there was some dust that was left over there of the carvings. So that was that belonged to him. He was able to collect it, and as a result, he became wealthy. Shenemar psalachos and luchos avanim karishonim. Psulasam shalcha yehe. The psolas, all the shavings belong to you. I'm Rav Yosef Rebbe Chanan Lonin Torah El Moshe Lazaro. The Gemara now is going to have a very interesting theory. hypothesis, and that is that the Torah initially was given only to Moshe and his descendants, but not to Klal Yisrael. Very interesting theory. The Gemara is really going to poke holes in this theory, eventually to the point where the Gemara is not going to uphold this particular thought. But it's an interesting one. Shenamar k'sev l'cha p'salacha. And the
Moshe wasn't in the desert, basically, with Israel. He wasn't
the most at what point? Agreed. And
how did he support himself until then?
Right. And if I'm right, which you'll see in the Gemara later on, it's not me being right. It's the Gemara saying that a prerequisite to Nevuah is that you have to be wealthy. So then the question is, I'm restating your question. So how can Moshe be a Navi? No, Moshe wasn't a Navi right there at the Luchos. He was a Navi much earlier. And presumably he wasn't wealthy earlier. Okay, I do hear you. I don't have a great suggestion, but the Gemara right now is supporting this idea, or going to attempt to support this idea, that the Torah was only originally given to Moshe and the descendants of Moshe. K'sav l'cha, p'sal l'cha, because we know that the instruction to Moshe was, you write and you carve out. Now, just as we established in the Gemara, the shavings of the Luchos belong to Moshe Rabbeinu. So you know what else does? The Luchos themselves, were originally given exclusivity to Moshe and his descendants. Moshe Nagbat Tovasayim Vanasan Yisrael. But even in this idea, Moshe then, what he did is he then gifted the Torah to Klal Yisrael, meaning that the ownership of the Torah really belonged to Moshe, but then he passed it along. And Moshe here is being described as Tovayin. He's generous. A number of psukim really seem to go against this idea that the Torah was only given to Moshe. So the Gemara here quotes one. And at that time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded me, Lalamed Eschem, to teach you. Sounds like there was a commandment for Moshe to teach the Torah, meaning the Torah was given to everyone. So the Gemara deflects. The Gemara says, well, maybe what the pasuk means is that I was commanded, and then Vani Lachem, and then I gave it to you. The Gemara quotes another pasuk. Kasher Tzivan Hashem Elokai. So once again, from the pasuk, it sounds like I was instructed to teach you chukim u'mishpatim. So again, the Gemara deflects. So si tzivav ani lachem. I was commanded, and then I gifted it over to you. So the Gemara then quotes another pasuk at the end of Sefer Devarim, where the Torah says, "And you now you don't hear this in the English language, but the you meaning in the plural, the atakisvu lachem, and you meaning all of Klal Yisrael are instructed to write down the Shira, right? The Hazinu." Shiras Hazinu. So that's clear that it's talking about all of Klal Yisrael. So again, how could you defend this position that the Torah was only originally given exclusively to Moshe? It's hard to defend. So again, the Gemara right now is still trying to defend this idea. Hashira Lichuda. Well, maybe what the Chumash means is that we were instructed to be given Chumash. That was our instruction. I'm sorry. We were instructed to be given the Shira, but just the Shira. Lamanti Eliya Hashira Azos Laid Bivnei Yisrael. So the Gemara says, okay, but at the same time, what's the purpose of Shira? It provides aidus, it provides testimony. Now, what is the Shira testifying about? Meaning, if all the Jewish people were given originally was just the Shira, so all we had was a song. We weren't given Torah, we weren't given mitzvos. And meanwhile, the purpose of the Shira is to provide testimony. What's the testimony? Testimony that we sing? That's the testimony? No, it's obviously that the testimony is that we keep Torah and mitzvos. So the Gemara finally abandons this idea that originally the Torah was only given to Moshe, and Moshe then on his own bequeathed it over to the Jewish people. So Ela Pilpua La Ba'alma. So the Gemara says as follows: the idea, we're not going to abandon the idea altogether. Moshe was given an exclusivity on some aspect of Torah, which he then passed on to the Jewish people. But there was an aspect of Torah that Moshe had exclusivity to, and that's what the Gemara describes as Pepula Ba'amah. Now, Pepula Amma means the sharpness of the Torah. Now, what exactly does that mean? Hard for me to articulate. The Ron doesn't say. If you look at the Mefarish on the inside, Lahavin Davar Mitoch Davar Hu Denitan LaMoshe V'Niyag Batovas Ayin V'Nitla Yisrael. So it's basically like keen insight, if you will, understanding one thing from another thing. The Rush also gives a similar explanation. He says, he does say something interesting. Havana v'charifas v'hainu k'savam shocha ki kol ha'chachma v'asecha remuzim b'ksava Torah. Just looking at the writing of the Torah, so there's chachma in the writing of the Torah. Bitsuras ha'osios. If you understand the shape of the letters, there's a discipline, if you will, of how the letters are written and the shapes of the letter. So that was given to Moshe. That's what the Rush understands over here as the Papula. That originally was given exclusivity to Moshe, and then Moshe passed it along.
But they're not.
Yeah, the Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin describes what the actual ksav was. So it's the Gemara over there is unclear in terms of what the original ksav was. It sounds like it was shuris, the block letters that we have nowadays. Not the there was a whatever. There's another ksav ivri, which is more circular. Okay. Anyway, back to our Gemara. Lost my spot. It'll come back. I got it. I'm Rav Yochanan. Okay, about halfway down the Amud, I'm Rav Yochanan. I know Baruch Hu Mishat Masha Shchina. So Ella Al Gibor VaAshev VaChacham VaAnav. Four attributes that a person has to have in order to have Hashras Hashchina, and they are: you have to be strong, you have to be wealthy, you have to be smart, and you have to be humble. VaKulam Moshe, and all this can be derived from Moshe. All these attributes. And let's go. Number one, Gibor Dichsiv. How do I know that Moshe was strong? The Torah says VaYifroses HaOl HaMishkan. So we know that Moshe was the one who spread the tent on top of the Mishkan. Moshe Rabbeinu himself spread it out. Now we know that each beam was 10 amos long, which means that, and they were put on its thin side. So in other words, from the ground to the top of the Mishkan was 10 amos. 10 amos is somewhere within the range of 15 to 20 feet. And that was the height of the Mishkan. And now Moshe was able to spread the ohel, the tent, on top of it. So that is an indication that he was strong. The Gemara says, no, it's not. Ema da'arich ve'katin. No, that's just an indication that he was tall. But it could be that he was tall, but he was very thin. A number of centers come to mind, but for the purposes of not sharing with you who I can think of, I'll pass on that. But anyway, but the Gemara suggests that's not a proof that he's strong, it's just a proof that he's tall. So Ela min ha'denkro, the Gemara says, dechsiv, ve'espos b'shnei aluchos v'ashlichem. Moshe was able to take the two luchos and hoist them and throw them down to the ground to the point where they shattered. And we know the dimensions of the luchos. They were 6 by 6 by 3. So the Gemara doesn't give us a weight, but the assumption is that they were very heavy. And meanwhile, Moshe was able to hoist them over his head and smash him down to the ground, and evidence that he was strong. Okay, so Moshe was strong. Two, Ashir, Psalacha, Psaltam, Shecha, Yeh. So as we already established earlier, that he had the Psal, the shavings of the Luchos, which must have been some sort of precious stone. It made him wealthy. Chacham Rav Shmuel Dami Tavayo Chamishim Sha'arei Bina Nivru Ba'olam. In terms of his Chachma, there were 50 levels of Chachma. Sha'arei Bina. Right, the gates of insight that are created in this world, v'kulam nitnu l'Moshe chazar achas, and Moshe was able to attain 49 of them. Shenemar v'tachzereu me'at me'elokim. The only thing that was missing from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from Moshe, was just a little bit me'elokim. Me'elokim, it's interesting. The Rambam over here says, what didn't Moshe know? Meaning he had 49 levels of insight of the 50. What was he missing? If you take a look at the at the Ran, chutz me'achas yediyas Hashem Yisbarach, meaning knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, ala mitaso, the Right, the reality of Hashem. That's something that Moshe could not grasp. In fact, I think that's what the Ran is saying. I mean, you see that actually from the Pasuk itself. The Pasuk says, what was lacking from Moshe? Ma'at me'lokim, meaning the actual essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that was beyond Moshe.
But how do you compare it to King Solomon?
Right, so, and the Gemara is not making a comparison. The Gemara is just simply saying that he was a Chacham. Right, I don't know how I wouldn't. I don't know how they would compare. Right, no, agreed. But okay, the only point that Gemara is making right now is that in order to get Hashra Shechina, so you have to be smart. Moshe was smart, right? Could be Shlomo was smarter, but that's the point right now is that Moshe had Chachma and Anav Dichsiv Vayish Moshe Anav Meod. And as far as Anivus is concerned, that's very straightforward. That the Chumash says that we don't have to tease it out of the Chumash. Okay, so Moshe Rabbeinu had these four attributes which allowed for Hashras Hashchina. I'm Rav Yochanan Kol Anivim Hashirim Hayu. Rav Yochanan goes a step further. It's a general prerequisite for Nevuah, and that is that you have to be wealthy. Minala Mi Moshe Umi Shmuel Umi Amos Umi Yonah, four Nevi'im that characterize this idea of being wealthy. Moshe Dichsev, meaning all Nevi'im had to be wealthy, but we're going to see through the Pesukim that we actually have an indication that these particular Nevi'im were wealthy, but Rav Yochanan is going to extrapolate and assume that that's true by all Nevi'im. Moshe Dichsev lo chamorach mehem nasasi. So Moshe Rabbeinu, he says that after a number of complaining, he says, look, I never took a donkey. Meaning, I never usurped my power. I never exploited, and I never took a donkey. Ibalo agra lafu geman deshaka below agra. Now, what does that mean when Moshe said I never took a donkey? What is he suggesting that I never stole a donkey? Meaning, that's a boast, right? Imagine a major politician say, you know, I'm such a great guy, I never stole. Like that, that's not a boast. That should be, I know, cynicism aside, but that should be a prerequisite. I mean, that's not something to be proud about. Ella dafila ba'agra. So the Gemara says what Moshe was saying was, I didn't need to even rent a donkey because I was self-sufficient. I was independently wealthy. So delma mishum dani hava. The Gemara says, look, it's not a great proof. Meaning, we're not rejecting the idea, it's just not a great proof. It could very well be that Moshe just simply didn't rent a donkey because he didn't have money. So we were looking for a proof. So the Gemara says, Elam im psalacha psalasam yehei, shocha. So the Gemara goes back to the idea that the psalas, the shavings of the luchos, is what made Moshe Rabbeinu wealthy. Shmol dechzi v'nini anu bi neged Hashem v'neged mishicho. Et shor milakachti v'chomor milakachti. So Shmol, very similar idea to that of Moshe. In fact, the Gemara later is going to compare the two. But when they asked for a king, so Shmuel said, what's wrong with me? Meaning, I'm the leader, and I'm doing a great job, and there's no malfeasance on my part. I didn't take a donkey. I didn't take an ox. Meaning, what exactly is your problem with me? So, ibechinam lafugeman deshaka bechinam. So the Gemara says again, what was Shmuel saying? Was he saying I didn't take a donkey? Right, the Gemara says that's not a boast. It's not something you would brag about. Ella afilu b'schar. So the Gemara says what he meant is I didn't rent a donkey because I was wealthy and I was financially independent. So the Gemara says doma dani hava. So once again, the Gemara says it's not a great proof. It could just simply be that Shmuel's poor. Ella mehacha shuvasa ramasik isham beso. So the Gemara brings another proof that Shmuel was wealthy. The Navi describes how Shmuel would basically do a tour of Eretz Yisrael, where he would go from town to town, right? Like we find the religious heads nowadays. We had a visit last year by the Rishon LeZion of Eretz Yisrael. So they go around. They go around the entire world, and you know, see how everyone's doing. They try to disseminate the good word. So Shmuel did that, and Kisham Beiso, and then eventually he would go back to Rama because that's where his house is. Va'ama Rava Kol Malkum Shalach Beiso Imo. So the drush in the pasuk is that wherever Shmuel went, so he took his house with him. Right, if you will, it's a somewhat of a strange visualization, but like he had like this Winnebago, like this like all the amenities of his home was brought with him wherever he went. He didn't just simply travel and and you know, slum anywhere, or you know, try to just take somebody's guest room. He brought his home with him because he had the means, he had the financial means. Now the Gemara is just simply going to compare that Shmuel's pride about how he didn't take a donkey or an ox is actually better than Moshe's pride, because the Ilba Moshe Ksiv, Ilba Moshe Rabbeinu Ksiv, Lo Chamorchem Em Nasasi Dafil Beschar. Moshe said that I didn't take a donkey, I didn't even have to rent a donkey because I was independently wealthy. Vila Gabi Shmuel Afilu Beratzon Lo Scharo. And by Shmuel, he goes even one step further. Because Shmuel says, look, I didn't even ask somebody to rent, goes without saying, but people offered me their animals to rent, and I still said, no, no, thank you, I'm good. I didn't even compel, induce somebody else to rent me an animal. In other words, I was so financially independent. Now we're back to the idea that we see the wealth of some of these Nevi'im. So we did Moshe Rabbeinu, we did Shmuel. We're now up to Amos. So the Pasuk in Amos describes him being Boker and Bolesh Kamim. Those are difficult words to understand, and the Gemara recognizes that, and the Gemara then provides for us Targum. Kidim Targum Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef, we say this, I find myself saying this so often, he is the Targum, he is one of the basic translators of Navi. So he writes in his Targum on the Chumash, in this case on the Navi, Are Marigisiana Vishakmin Li Bishiflasa. So I own cattle, and it's great, by the way. Targum helps us understand the Navi, but only if you understand Aramaic. So, right, the back in the days when everyone spoke Aramaic, Targum was great. Now, Targum is a challenge. But Are Mare Gisiana, I own oxen, Vishikmin Li, and I own sycamore trees, Bishif Lasa, down in the plains, the Shafel. Okay, so so once again, Amos himself declares himself to be wealthy. Again, just another proof that it's a prerequisite to Ashras Hashchina. And finally, Yonah. And Yonah went on the boat, and he paid for. Now, the way I generally understood it was he paid for his ticket to get on the boat. But the Gemara goes one step further. Not one step further. Many steps further. The Amar Rav Yochanan Shenasan Schara Shel Svina Kula. He paid for the entire boat. I guess the boat wasn't ready to travel that day. And Yonah said, no, we're going. Right as he was trying to run away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his mission to go to Nineveh. So he paid for the entire boat. Amar Rabbi Rumano Schara Shel Svina Havyadal Alaf in Dinari Dahava. The cost of the boat was 4,000 gold coins. Okay, I'm guessing that that's just simply a lot of money. And again, it speaks to the wealth of Yonah. And one final point the Gemara says regarding Moshe and his Kabbalah Satorah. For the 40 days of Moshe, Rabbeinu was up in Shemaim and he was learning together with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So he was learning the Torah and he kept forgetting it. So, and then eventually, Kadosh Baruch Hu gave it to him. B'matana shenemar v'yitena Moshe kakalasola daber ito. V'yitain is the same verb as matana. Tana, Moshe was given the Torah as a gift, but make the obvious point, the gift was only given after Moshe made an attempt to learn. So in other words, so we make our attempts, we do our ishtadlus, we try our hardest to try to try to understand and to try to process the Torah. There's a lot. I mean, I think the idea is clear. It takes us a daf a day, 7.5 years just to go through Talmud, and that, you know, that's not everything. There's still other Mishnayos that we don't cover, and there's still Midrashim that we don't cover. There's a lot out there, so we have to do our Ishtadlus, and eventually Kadosh Baruch Hu gives us an assistance, and that we see from Moshe Rabbeinu. Icon Divrei Agadah. That is the end of the Agadic section of today, and for the remainder of today, we're back to Mishnah, and we're back to learning Nedarim. We are in the fourth parak of Nedarim.
Can I get 15 seconds? Was learning the Torah. It says on the Kabbalah Mishnah Torah series that he, at 6 years of age, he was so upset that he couldn't remember, learn anything. He went to the Beit Midrash, prayed and cried and cried for hours and hours. And he was gifted way more than he imagined, and he left
The fourth parak of the Masechta. So with the fourth parak now gives us some principal ideas regarding what exactly a neder will forbid. So in other words, so if a person makes a neder against another, I don't want to use anyone here as an example, because obviously the reason why the neder was set is because of some sort of animosity that existed between the two parties. But let's say there are two people. Neder was made, and again, the neder can go in either direction. In other words, the one who makes the neder can say, I'm not getting benefit from you, or he could say, you're not getting benefit from me. For the purpose of our discussion, we use the terms madir and mudar. So madir is the one who is not allowed to confer benefit to the other. Mudar is the one who is prohibited from receiving benefit. Okay, that's grammatically. Madir is the cause, and mudar is the nifal. It's the passive. It's the object, the subject of. Okay, so and generally, we start off the parak by saying that if I make a general neder hana, so then the mudar cannot receive any benefit from the madir. We talked about even walking on his property, right? Is that considered a benefit? The Mishnah said yes. The Gemara said that's going like Rabbi Eliezer. So right now, within this fourth paragraph, we're talking about what is going to be actually forbidden as a result of the neder. With that in mind, we continue with the Mishnah. V'zanis ishtov es banav, afa pishu chayav b'mezonos son. So let's say that a neder was made where Shimon was not allowed to provide benefit to Reuven. So Shimon obviously can't give Reuven any food, but what Shimon is allowed to do is Shimon's allowed to feed Reuven's wife and Reuven's children. And even though Reuven obviously is obligated to feed his wife and his children, but that's exactly the chiddush of the Mishnah. Despite the fact that Reuven has that obligation, Reuven for whatever reason is shirking that obligation, Shimon, who cannot provide benefit to Reuven, is allowed to feed the wife and the kids. Now, that does seem like a benefit towards Reuven, because Reuven no longer is obligated to pay that money. So the Ran reminds us that this is a machlokus between Hanan and the Chachamim, whether an indirect benefit like this is considered a benefit. But the Ran goes on to say, you know, take a look at the Ran inside on the Mishnah. So the Afilu Kirabanan Asya. So the Ran says that, in other words, he's assuming that we already remember the machlokus between Hanan and the Chachamim. So the Ran right away says that this Mishnah could even be going like the Chachamim. How so? The Betaras mitzvah askinam velo Betaras piraon shabaal. Because maybe all the guy's doing is he's just doing a mitzvah. Meaning right now, a woman and the children need to be fed and no one's providing for them. So in other words, they are in a state of anius. So somebody along is coming along and giving them money. Yes, it's true that he's not allowed to provide benefit for the husband. That's true. But that's not why he's giving the money. He's giving the money simply because it's a mitzvah. The Ran goes on to say, now it's true that the mudar, in this case, the husband, Reuven, so even though he's benefiting, okay, good. That's coming automatically, but that's not coming directly as a result of Shimon, and Shimon is not having that mind. Maybe he's just doing it as a mitzvah. That is the Ran's suggestion over here, that our Mishnah is even going like the Chachamim. Fine. V'zan nizisha v'zbana, back to the Mishnah, afa pishi chai b'mezon asam, v'lo yizon es behemto bein tamea bein tahora. You could feed, Shimon could feed Reuven's wife and children. Shimon cannot feed Reuven's animals. Okay? Again, Reuven is not allowed to receive benefit from Shimon. Shimon can feed his wife and his children, but not his animals. His animals, that's property. And by feeding the animals, basically what you're doing is you're sustaining his property. That's a direct benefit that Shimon is providing for Reuven. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Zan Es HaTameh Ve'Eino Zan Es HaTahora. Now Rabbi Eliezer says that I'm going to make a distinction between kosher versus non-kosher animal. What Shimon could do is he could feed the non-kosher animal, but he cannot feed the kosher animal. Amru lo, so they say to Rabbi Eliezer, I don't understand. Ma bein tamei l'tahara. I understand, what's the difference? Property is property. So Amru lo hu, sha'tor nafshal l'shamayim v'gufa shalom. So Rabbi Eliezer says, I'll tell you what the difference is. It's pretty intuitive. When it comes to a kosher animal, so when that kosher animal dies, nafshal shamayim, the soul of the animal goes up to shamayim, right? The Mishnah over here, I don't know if the Mishnah really intends to say this, but the Mishnah over here is talking about the nefesh of an animal. Okay, but I don't know how critical we should be in terms of reading this this point of the Mishnah. But anyway, the basic point of the Mishnah is, look, you know, when a kosher animal, when it dies, you know what can happen? You eat it. So, v'gufo shelo. Utameya, however, when it comes to a non-kosher animal, nafsha v'gufo l'shamayim. Both the soul of the animal and the body of the animal go to shamayim. Otherwise stated, you can't eat the non-kosher animal. Amr lo, so they say back to Rabbi Eliezer, I'm not into your distinction. Afa tameya nafshal shamayim v'gufo shelo. Even a non-kosher animal, the nefesh goes to shamayim, but you get to keep the animal. A non-kosher animal that's dead, the carcass of a non-kosher animal, you could sell it to a non-Jew. You can feed it to your dog. You're allowed to get hana'a from non-kosher animals. In the world of kashrus, you're allowed to get, in general, you're allowed to get hana'a from non-kosher. The only thing precluded from that, not the only thing, but one of the few things that's precluded from that is basar b'chalav, meat and milk. Meat and milk you're not allowed to get benefit from. You're not allowed to eat it, you're not allowed to cook it, and you're not allowed to get benefit from. But in general, when it comes to something that's not kosher, you're allowed to get hana. So the Chachamim say back to Rabbi Eliezer, I still don't buy your distinction. Okay.
Is that the same with the slave, Rabbi?
Well, actually, that's at the end of the daf today. We're going to be discussing the feeding of the slave. Okay, so what do we have in our Mishnah now? So let's say Reuven made a neder, or whoever made the neder, right? A neder was made that now prohibits Reuven to get benefit from Shimon. So here's what Shimon can do. Shimon could feed his wife and kids if Reuven, for whatever reason, is neglectful of doing so. So, and that's not considered a benefit. That's considered indirect. And according to the Ran, that can even go like the Chachamim. It doesn't have to be like just like Hanan. And the Mishnah then brought in a debate in terms of whether or not Shimon is allowed to feed the animals of Reuven. Feeding is kosher animals that everyone agrees he cannot do because that is providing a direct benefit to Reuven. Because his animals is his property, and by sustaining and fattening up his animals, that is a direct benefit towards Reuven that you're not allowed to do. What about feeding the non-kosher animals? So that is subject to a debate. Rabbi Eliezer wants to make the argument that the non-kosher animals is not such a hana because what happens when the animal dies? Nothing. In other words, you don't get to eat it. Where the Chachamim argue, and the Chachamim say, no, it still has a value. In other words, after the animal dies, so what you could do is you can either sell it to a guy or feed it to your animal, feed it to your dogs. So to say that the non-kosher animal has no value, that's not true. Okay? So
contradicted by
machzitah
shekel when it
pays for it. The machzitah shekel is a mitzvah. So the argument you can make is that I'm helping him do, or I'm doing a mitzvah in paying the machzitah shekel. Here, all you're doing is just sustaining somebody else's property. Okay?
So,
no, right. Well, actually, okay. Let's see it. No, we'll wait till later. Later, we'll talk about whether the food that you're providing is to keep it alive, or is the food that you're providing just to get it fatter. That's in the Mishnah. That's not perfectly clear. We'll come back and we'll discuss that point in just a moment. Okay, let's start with the Gemara. We are on Lamed Chesam and Beis. Amar Rav Yitzchak Bar Chanina. Amar Rav Huna Hamuda Hana Mechavero. Someone who is not allowed to get benefit from his friend. Muta la'asilo bito. So you can marry off the daughter. So if there is a neder between two people, so despite the neder, so you can marry his daughter. So havi bar Rabbi Zera b'mayaskinan. So the Gemara says, okay, but can we just clarify a very simple point? Which direction is the neder being made? In other words, we're talking about two men who made a neder against one another, and despite that, a marriage can be made between the one man's daughter and the other man. And which direction is the neder going? So, let's start off with the proposal that the property of the father of the bride is prohibited towards the chasan. Good. Hare, so now that means that this chassan cannot get any benefit from his potential father-in-law. And right now what the Gemara is assuming, the Gemara doesn't say this, but it's clear, what the Gemara is assuming right now is that the daughter in question is a ketana, she's a minor. Which means that the father of the bride is has the authority. She's under the jurisdiction of the father of her father, and so that means now that the father is basically giving his daughter over to the man. So the Gemara says, if that's the case that we're talking about, so then this, of course, makes no sense. If the neder forbids the chassan to get benefit from his potential father-in-law, and the potential father-in-law now is giving him his daughter, who was a katana, that's a direct violation of the neder. The Gemara says, "Hare Moshe lo shivcha l'shamsho." I know the Gemara is speaking a little sharply, but the Gemara basically says, "So good. So now what this guy's giving you is someone to take care of you." Right, his ketana daughter now is given to take care of you, and you're not allowed to get through the neder. You're not allowed to get the benefit from this man. So that's a direct violation of the neder. That can't be what we're saying. I'm sorry, alavi kala. So the Gemara says, okay, maybe we'll go in the other direction. Maybe the case over here is where the chasson's property is prohibited to the avia kala. Okay, that's the direction of the neder. So, and now what is being taught? What's being taught is, despite the fact that the chassan's property is also to his potential father-in-law, nevertheless, he can marry this guy's daughter. And what is he going to be doing by marrying him? By marrying the daughter? He's going to be taking her off of his hands. He'll be feeding her and supporting her. Okay, and one less financial burden for his father-in-law. Okay, sorry to speak so harshly like that, but in other words, just to make sure that we understand what the idea is.
We learned this before the previous mission.
The Gemara says, Danny, perfect. Gedola miza amru. That, if that's all we're saying, we're not saying anything. Because think about what we said in the Mishnah. Zanis ishtov ez banav afa pishu chai b'mezonosam. Ve'at amart mutal asi lo bito. So the Gemara says, look, in the Mishnah, we made a much better point. We made a point that you could support somebody's daughter, even if they're not living in your house, even if they're still living in their parents' house, but for whatever reason, they're not being supported by the parent. So we learned in the Mishnah that you can support the daughter, even though you're not allowed to provide benefit for the father. There's no violation of the neder by you feeding the daughter. Over here, now that we know that, this point is obvious. Because this point is telling us that when the daughter of this man is going into your house, so then you could feed her. The Mishnah is telling us even better. You can feed her while she's still living in her parents' house. And over here, all we're saying is, and when you bring her into your house, you can feed her as well. That's obvious. So la'olam b'shenech se'avi kala asur na'al chassan. So the Gemara says, okay, let's go back to our original thought, which was as that the property of the father is prohibited to the chassan. Uvebito bogeres umidata. And here's the chiddush. The chiddush is that the daughter in question over here is not a ketana, meaning that's the assumption we're going to change. But rather, she is a gedola. And as a result of her being a gedola, so now she's not being married under the jurisdiction of her father. It's not her father who's marrying her off, but rather she's marrying her off herself. So, and that's the chiddush. The chiddush is that even though now you are forbidden to get benefit from her father, but she can come to you because she's doing so on her own volition. Okay, Tanya Namihachi, the Gemara quotes a braisa that states this explicitly. Hamud arna mechavero asa lasila bito. Ava mesia bito bogeres umidata. If I'm not allowed to get benefit from somebody, and he has a minor daughter, so then I can't marry the minor daughter, because the minor daughter is coming to me through the father. In other words, she is under the jurisdiction of the father. So then, that's a direct violation of the neder, because the father's giving me his daughter. So that's a direct violation of the neder. If, however, he has an adult daughter, a bogeres, so that I'm allowed to marry, I'm allowed to marry because that's not a violation of the neder. She's coming on her own volition. She's not coming under the auspices of her father. I'm Rabbi Yaakov, Hamad Yabinola Tamatara Mutala Maloslo. Rabbi Yaakov says a person makes a neder against his son. for the purposes of Talmud Torah, the Ran explains what this is interesting. The Ran explains what's going on over here is as follows. The father wants his son to learn. Now we know that every child has a mitzvah of kibud av v'aim. The mitzvah of kibud av v'aim, Gemara and Kiddushin tells us, is a very difficult mitzvah. The you guys see the Gemara's over there for a description of how difficult the mitzvah of honoring your parents is. And for our purposes, all we need to note is that it's time-consuming to honor your parents. It takes time to go and to serve your parents. And meanwhile, the father over here wants his son to learn Torah. So what the father does is he creates a neder so that he cannot get benefit from the son. Okay?
It's a mitzvah for the son to honor his father.
It's a mitzvah for the son to honor the father. So the father, what the father's in purpose and intent over here is to do, is to basically relieve his son of his obligation so that the son can commit himself to learning Torah. That's the way the Ran understands our Gemara over here. So Hamad Dibanola Tamat Torah Mutter. So even though there is a neder that was created by the father so that he's not allowed to get benefit from the son, but still the son's allowed to do some very simple activities for the father. Mutter Lamalaso Chavishamayim. So a glass of water, though that's not a literal translation of the Gemara, but in other words, get him a glass of water, lahad l'gnor saner, turn the lights on. Rav Yitzchak amar l'tzalaslo dakatan. Rav Yitzchak says, fry a small fish. Again, these are very simple, trivial tasks. The Ran says, the fourth wide line of the Ran, demistama mimili zutri kihani, deleka behu bito limotara, lo adre, because this was not within the scope of the neder. These are very trivial, non-time-consuming tasks, and therefore this was not under the scope of the neder. And if the son does this for the father, it's not a violation of the neder. I'm Rav Yirmiyahu, I'm Rav Yochanan, Hamudar. I'm sorry. Period. Okay. So the very interesting. Basically, what the Gemara is teaching us now is that even though a general neder was made from one person to another, based on the context, like we just saw, so part of the scope of the neder can be defined just based on the basic context of why the neder was made. Okay. Amrav Yirmiya, Amrav Yochanan. Hamur ha'na mechaver motel ashkoso. Kosho shalom. If, let's say, you are bound by neder to not provide benefit to somebody else, and you're the mudar, you're the subject of the neder, meaning you're the one who cannot provide benefit for somebody else, what you could do is you can pour them a kos shel shalom. Okay, what does that mean? My nihu? So hacha targimasa over here in Bavel, the way it was translated as kos shel beitz avel, in the house of mourner. House of mourner, there used to be a minhag, the Gemara Moed Katan tells us that when they came home from the cemetery, so they would drink wine. Extensively. The Gemara over there describes how they drank 10 cups of wine. The Gemara over there actually told us that it was more, but it got out of hand, so they scaled it back to 10. 10 is the 10 is the is a modified version of what they would drink. Anyway, that's in. So here in Bavel, they would translate Koshel Shalom as the cup. In other words, that's not a real benefit. Although it's unclear from the Gemara who's providing the wine. Meaning the Koshel Shalom is all that you're doing is you're pouring the cup, you're serving. Or does that mean you're actually also providing the wine itself? That's not clear. You can take a look at the Ran. I'm not going to go through it inside, but you can take a look at the Ran, and that's subject to a debate amongst the Rishonim, what exactly the Gemara means within this context. Ben Ma'arava Amrei, now in Eretz Yisrael, they give a different pshat, Koshel Beis HaMerchatz. After going to the Shvitz, older generation can relate to this much better than the younger generation. After going to the Shvitz, so what you would do is you would drink. This cup of water that you drank after the Shvitz, it was medicinal, it was therapeutic. And so even though I'm not allowed to provide benefit for him, but the cup of water after the Shvitz is, again, trivial. It's not a violation of the neder. Okay, and finally, finishing up the daf today. Lo yizonas behemto bein v'chulei. Okay, Tanya Yeshua ish uza amar zan avadav v'shiv chosav ha'kananim. V'lo yizonas behemto bein tmeya bein tahara. Okay, so now here's what we know, and here's the missing property, meaning in our Mishnah, I know that if I'm not allowed to provide benefit for somebody, right? In other words, a neder was created, articulated, so I can't benefit him. So we learned in our Mishnah that I could feed his wife and his children, okay? Because that's not a direct benefit to him. It is indirect, but as we pointed out back in the Mishnah, it's fine, and it could be even according to the Chachamim, it's fine. We also learned in the Mishnah that I'm not allowed to feed his kosher animals. That everyone agrees. Because by feeding his kosher animals, I am directly benefiting him because I am sustaining / fattening his property. So that's unequivocally, I cannot do that. That's a violation of the neder. What about feeding his non-kosher animals? That was a machlokus in the Mishnah between Rav Elazar and the Chachamim. What about his slaves? So that the Mishnah does not describe. Now the slaves also is his property. Okay, we're going back to a time when they were chattel. So just simply part of his asset, of his net portfolio. And the Mishnah does not describe whether me feeding his avadim is considered a violation of the neder. Is he getting hana? So that's exactly what the Gemara fills in over here. That gap the Gemara fills in. Zan avada v'shiv chosava kananim. V'lo yizan es behem to bein tmeya bein tahara. So even though I can't feed his animals, whether kosher or non-kosher, right? This b'raisa is siding with the chachamim that you can't feed his animals, but you're allowed to feed the avadim. My taima, and why should that be? So avada v'shivchos av hakananim lemancharusa avidan behema lepetume avida. Because look, when it comes to the animals, what's the purpose of an animal? Purpose of an animal is I want a fatter animal. The fatter the animal, the better it is. So every single time I feed the animal, I'm directly benefiting the owner of the animal, because that's the whole purpose of an animal. The whole purpose of an animal is that it gets fatter. So good. So that's why if I feed the animal, so I'm bringing it from 100 pounds to 101 pounds, so that's a pound of hana'a that I just gave the owner of the animal. But when it comes to avadim, so by me feeding the eved, so that's not a direct benefit to the owner, because there's no, I don't want a fatter slave. Now, the obvious point you can make over here is, he doesn't want a fatter slave, but he's still like a slave. Isn't by me feeding the slave, sustaining the slave, isn't that a benefit? So that's where the Ron comes in over here. The point that I mentioned, we're going to mention later. Now we're mentioning it now. The Ron says, "As avadav eshev chasav kananim nearly." The Ron says, the last Ron on the Gemara. "Dibim mezonus yaserim kamar va'adur avalazer kai v'hachi kamar." So that the Ron says that our Gemara over here are talking about the mudar. Providing food for the slaves is only talking about extra food. Meaning the basic rations for the slave, obviously, if I'm providing that so that the slave lives, obviously that's a benefit to the owner of the slave. That would be a violation of the neder. But here we're talking about giving the slave extra food. Because v'hachi kamar hushir yusad d'shar rev alazah be'behema t'meya d'hainu mezonus yaseirim k'moshim perashim mishnah senu. Because even when Rev Elazar in the Mishnah says that you could feed the non-kosher animals, he wasn't talking about the basic food rations of the non-kosher animal. Because once again, if you're keeping the animal alive, that's obviously a direct benefit to the owner. And that was never open for discussion, says the Ron. So if we're talking about the basic ration so that he lives, that is a direct benefit, and that would obviously be a violation of the neder. If we're talking about extra food, now we understand the distinction between animals versus slaves. Animals, every extra food that you give them is gonna result in a direct benefit to the owner. Because every pound that the animal gets bigger is gonna be more money for the owner. When it comes to the slaves, that's not true. After the slave has enough to eat, and now you give him more food, so it's not going to help. In fact, probably would hurt. right, make him right, make him slower, a little more lethargic. So anyway, so that's, and that's why that would be okay, not a violation of the neder, because that's not going to be directly benefited by the owner of the slave. Adkan, that brings us to the end of today's daf. Just a quick recap: we finished up Torah Misinai, what's encompassed in Torah Misinai, the four categories that are encompassed in Torah Misinai, Hashra Shechina, the four qualities that a person needs that Moshe Rabbeinu had in order to experience Hashra Shechina. Our prerequisite to Nevuah is wealth, and we talked about how we identified four Nevi'im today who clearly from the Pesukim were wealthy. And then we had a Mishnah. The Mishnah here describes a neder that was made between one person and another. The Mudar is allowed to feed his wife and his kids. The Mudar is allowed to marry off his daughter after she becomes a Bulgaris. You're not allowed to feed the animals in a machlokas in the Mishnah, whether that's only by kosher animals, even by non-kosher animals itself. And the discussion that we had in the Gemara regarding what about the feeding of his avadim, which the Gemara says is mutter, but as the Ran pointed out, that's not to keep them alive, that's the extra and above food, which is not going to be a direct benefit to the owner. Tomorrow we start, just if I can promote tomorrow's daf, tomorrow we start the sugya of Bikur Cholim. Tomorrow and Friday morning are going to be some of the main Gemaras that discuss the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim.